I'd like to welcome everyone. Wish everyone a good morning on this day off. Special welcome to my parents who drove out from Teaneck. Can we get a round of applause? I guess it's not often they get to hear me give a shiur. Hopefully they'll get some naches. I guess we'll see how the shiur goes. It's also amazing to see how many people came out on a day off to learn together, to hear a shiur for locks. And it's really uplifting. It's such a chizuk to see so many people here this morning. My favorite story, perhaps I ever heard, I heard this story first 5 years ago, and I've heard it four or five times in different contexts. There's a story about Rapam. Rapam was the great Rosh Hashiva of Tor V'Das, a brilliant Talmud Chacham, and really a fascinating Torah personality. Rav Pam, every year, would hang up a flag outside of his apartment in Brooklyn on July 4th. The night of July 4th, Rav Pam would hang up a flag. One year, his granddaughter, I don't know if she was living with Rav Pam at the time, or she just was staying there for a short period of time, but she had a date. She had a shidduch date, and it was the first date, and the date was picking her up at her grandparents' house. I guess if you're a Pam's granddaughter, it's not a bad idea to have the date pick you up at a Pam's house. That's pretty impressive. Look at my grandfather. So she had a date picking her up at a Pam's house. She approached the Rebbetzin that afternoon, her grandmother, a Pam's wife, and said, you know, maybe you could talk to Zadie, yeah, the flag thing. Maybe he could wait till after the date. She said, what's the problem? She said, you know, Bubby, it's a little old-fashioned. Today, as you pick me up, the flag, could Rapam maybe ask Zadie to wait until after the date to hang up the flag? And she said, I don't know her name, Bubula, don't worry. Zadie's old. Zadie's not feeling well. Zadie is very weak. There's no doubt that this year he's not going to be hanging up the flag. It's heavy. It's a burden. He's not going to hang up the flag this year. She said, thank you, Bubby. So sure enough, a couple hours later, the door, there's a knock on the door. It's the date. He's there, his suit, his hat, he's ready to go on the date. And who comes to answer the door? Rapam. And Rapam welcomes him in, and he says, you know, before my granddaughter comes down, maybe he could help me with something. He brings him to the side room, said, I have this flag, I need some help hanging the flag up. And there are a lot of lessons from that story. You could be Rapam, and your grandchildren will still think you're old-fashioned. You can't escape that. A value that's important to Rapam, and we'll talk, the value of, thought it was important to hang up a flag on July 4th, it's important, it shouldn't matter the circumstances, it shouldn't matter who's going to be embarrassed, and you could take that value and teach it, even to someone you don't even know. Rapam was also very attuned to what was going on in the world. There's another story that Rapam, on Halloween night, his wife would sit in the kitchen and make popcorn. And she would put it in bags, and they would give out the popcorn to the trick-or-treaters in Brooklyn. Rapam felt, I'm not celebrating Halloween, but someone comes to my door, why shouldn't I give them? Rapam, so to speak, got it. And I think probably the most important message of the story is that Rapam felt that it was important to hang up the American flag on July 4th. And the story always resonated. This idea was cemented when my grandfather, Alva Shalom, passed away a few years ago, my mother's father, at the funeral in Florida. He was a World War II veteran. He had a Purple Heart. And they had the full Army veteran. If anyone here has been to a funeral like that, it's very, very moving. And when the soldiers or the members of the Army fold the flag and present it, in this case, to my grandmother, on one knee, and it was very, very moving. And there was something about the flag, a certain chashivus to the U.S. flag, which resonated after hearing that Rapam story. A few years later, I'm living in Pesach, and a friend of mine, Rabbi Miller, who is a Rebbe in Yeshiva Ketan in Pesach, he drove by his house to pick something up on July 4th, and he had a huge American flag. It was the only one in Pesach, because either it was from Jews or non-Americans, and he had a huge flag outside of his house in Pesach. And I said to him, oh, what's going on? And he said, do you know who my uncle is? I said, no. He said, we're with Victor Miller. I said, okay. He felt as like pasha, that I should know what that means. So I didn't. So I did a little research. Rabbi Victor Miller spoke frequently about America and about the flag. He had a famous Thursday night shiur. I think after the shiur, he had a Q&A, and they published a couple of svarim with his questions and answers. And I put two of them in the source sheet. I like to read them together. Really, really interesting. Rabbi Victor Miller is at the Tzadik Brach in source one. He says, displaying the American flag, is that considered a Gentile ideal? That was the question posed to Rav Victor Miller. Let me tell you something. 50 years ago, I wouldn't have spoken about that. I've been speaking more than 50 years in public. I didn't speak about American flags. We don't need it. Who needs American flags? It wasn't necessary. Today, I say, if you want to do it, I say, Yasher Koach. Do you know why? Because all the Rishonim are trampling on the flag, and they're trying to desecrate America. After all, America is a good country. We come from countries where we were persecuted, and this country gave us all the rights. I would say we should kiss the ground of America. Now, last year, Shavuos, I gave a shiur on kissing mitzvahs, and we quoted the Gemara in Ksuvos about kissing the land of Israel. Not sure if this is allusion to that. We should kiss the ground of America. I was in Europe for some time. I went to study in the yeshiva. I came back, and I saw this as a blessed country. It's a gift from Hashem to us. Shouldn't we appreciate it? And therefore, I say a Jew should hang out the flag. Yes. Today, yes. I won't say you're a sinner if you don't. But I think it's a good thing to hang out the flag today. It's not a contradiction. Not a contradiction by any means. We hang out the flag from this shul on the 4th of July. That was Rav Victor Miller. Now, Rav Victor Miller was probably the first American-born gadol. Rav Victor Miller was born in 1908 in Baltimore, went to public school. At 17 years old, he went to MTA, YU High School, and was there until 1928 in high school in yeshiva when he went to learn the great Slobodky yeshiva in Europe. He was roommates with Rav Gifter, who also learned in America. He was roommates, close friends with Rav Nosson Vaxvogel, who ended up being the Mashkiach in Lakewood. Rav Victor Miller came back in 1932 or 1934, I don't remember, and was a Rav in Chelsea, Massachusetts. I'm not sure if his American upbringing helped shape his attitude towards America, but in a very colorful and interesting words in the next source, he asked, what should be our attitude towards the phenomenon of flag burning that we have been witnessing in recent months? Now, I'm not sure when this speech was, but my guess was it was in the mid-1980s. In 1984, Gregory Johnson burned, I was 4 years old at the time, so I don't remember, but I'm sure the people here do, burned the flag to protest Ronald Reagan's policies outside of Republican National Convention in Dallas, and was arrested because it violated the statute which forbade the desecration of the flag. That went all the way to the Supreme Court when they had the amendment, which now said it was no longer illegal to burn the flag. It was protected under the freedom of speech. And the burning of the flag became somewhat in style. It could be he's responding to those events. I'm not positive. But he writes, we have to appreciate America. America is a very big bracha. This is interesting. America is like a big ice cream cake. What we have here is a luxury. I should have had an ice cream cake as dessert today. That would have been cute. What we have here is a luxury. There is so much freedom. There is such opportunity to make a living. And therefore, when a person is giving a very big birthday cake, or let's say a very big yontif cake with lots of ice cream, lots of toppings, and he's putting his face into the cake and eating it, and he's getting smeared with ice cream, and then he says, ugh, what a bother this is. What a mess. He's complaining. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says to him, what more can I do for you, my dear friend? I tried. America is such a big cake of happiness. You should appreciate what HaKadosh Baruch Hu has given you. The flag is a symbol of all the privileges that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us in this country. And therefore, it's not a bad idea, even if you never did it before, to hang out a flag on the 4th of July. That's really interesting. This was a Rav Pam, who was a Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vadas. This is a Rav Victor Miller, who was a Rav in Massachusetts. Then was Mashkiach in Chaim Berlin. And they both hung up a flag and felt very proud and felt it was important to show appreciation to America. So I had over the years seen this stored away. And then this year, when I was preparing a shiur for Shavuos, I saw a fascinating Rav Moshe Feinstein tshuva, which I think is framed very well in light of these two anecdotes. And that is whether a shul should hang a flag in the shul. We just spoke about how important it is. It's the sign of our appreciation. The flag is a symbol of all the privileges that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving us in this country, like Rav Victor Miller said. There are shuls, you'll see this in some shuls, I believe there are even shuls in town, that have both the American flag and the Israeli flag up. Different shuls have in different places, up next to the Aron Kodesh. If the flag is so important, and it's important to show our appreciation, to hang the flag, so is it appropriate in a shul to hang a flag? A shul is a makom kadosh. We don't normally bring in a divrei chulin, things that are mundane, into a shul. The flags may be mundane, maybe it has an element of kedusha. Should a shul hang a flag? So interestingly enough, Rav Moshe Feinstein has a tshuva in source 3 on the matter. This is a tshuva written in 1957. In 1957, Rav Moshe was asked by Rav Yisachar Berich Halperin. He was the Admor, the Rebbe, mi Beitcha, Reisha Beitch. Rav Halperin was a Holocaust survivor. He was born in 1889. The beauty of Google. He was born in 1889, was very active in the Agudas Yisrael in Europe. His wife and four children were killed by the Nazis, Yimach Shemam. He was in Rome for a little bit, in London for a little bit, and came to the Bronx and had a shul in the Bronx called Zichron Elazar. Rav Halperin sent the question to Rav Moshe that there were people who wanted to leave the shul. Now, he doesn't say if it was his shul. He doesn't say if people came to him and wanted to leave a shul and he wanted to break off shul. It's unclear what his feelings were on the matter. But he asked Rav Moshe Feinstein that there was a shul that they had flags hung up in the shul and people wanted to break away. People being upset at shuls and wanting to break away is not a new phenomenon. In 1957, Rav Moshe sends him a tshuva and says as follows. I'd like to read a little bit together. Rav Moshe says, makes a couple of interesting points. He says in this in the paragraph on the right side, Hine, Bedavar Beis HaKnesses, Shed Nivne Kedin, and I'm sorry it's a little bit small, Kedin, L'Kedushas Beis HaKnesses, V'Kvar is Palubo, a shul that was built with the proper protocols of the sanctity of a shul. And it's already been used. So people already daven there. Hu B'Kedushaso, Afim Nas Hashom Aveira Mamish. A shul that a sin, a real sin. He goes on to say, even a sin as bad as zinus, sexual impropriety, was done in the sanctuary of a shul, the shul retains its kedusha. A shul always retains its sanctity. So he says, even if, three lines from the bottom, vim kain, four lines from the bottom, afim nema, de ha'amadas ha'digalim ebeis ha'kneses hu davar iser, even if you'll tell me, he's going to say it's not an iser, but even if you're going to tell me there's a prohibition and hang up flags in a shul, lo nischala hakedusha bekach. The sanctity of the shul has not been desecrated. The adif lis palo sham milasos minyan b'makom chol k'mo b'chol beis hakneses. It's better to daven this. We have a whole shiur on this topic. It's better to daven in a place with kedushas beis hakneses than to daven in a house or in another building where you're going to make a minyan without kedushas beis hakneses. So even if an avera was done, it's still better to daven in a shul than to make a minyan in a place which doesn't have kedushas beis hakneses. But then says Rav Moshe, wait a second, ube'etzem, in the second paragraph, the second column, lo muvan eze iser mamish yesh b'amadas degalim. What iser is there? What prohibition is there to hang flags in the shul? What's the problem? Says Rav Moshe, Haleka iser lahachnes dvar m'sheim chulin, af she'ein behem shum tzorech lebeis hakneses. There's no prohibition to bring something mundane into a shul, even if there's no purpose for the shul. There's no purpose, you're not using it, a phone you can use to daven, but to bring in something which is mundane into a shul, there's no iser, says Rav Moshe. Rav Moshe says, maybe you'll tell me, and we're not going to focus on his harsh comments about Zionism and the founders of the flag, but says Rav Moshe, if you look at the fifth line, V'af she'ilu shenas she'asu ze ledegel v'simin l'medinas Yisrael ha'yu Rishayim, even though those who created the flag were Rishayim, the Israeli flag, Mikol makom, halo hichziku zel davar kadosh. They didn't establish it as something holy. Rav Soloveitchik will comment on this in a minute. Shenema shiyeh chashash greira davar zara. If it was created for something as a holy symbol, and they were shy, maybe you could argue that it has a concern, an element, a chashash, a suspicion of Avodah Zarah. He says, that's not the case. Yeah, but he says that's not the case. Why? The Adua L'Kol, She'asu Zeh L'Simin Ba'alma, V'havi Zeh K'chol Davar Chol. It wasn't made as like a Devar Mitzvah. It was made as a Simin. Every country, every movement needs a flag. We see that already in Sefer Devarim. So they create a flag. There's no Chashash of Avodah Zarah. The Gam Degel Artzos HaBrish Shehu Gam Kein Sham, the U.S. flag which is there, Mochiach, the fact that the U.S. flag is there proves that they're not having the Israeli flag as a mitzvah item. Rak simon al min halei beis hakneses shemechavin medina zu umedina Yisrael v'cheftzu laharo zebim alkom roim. Why do they have the flag in shul? They have the flag in shul. They would like to display for all to see that we appreciate the country. We are mechaviv. It's precious to us. The greatest way to do that is in the most public place, and the most public place for a community is in the shul. So it's not a davar kadosh. It's not. There's no concern of avodah zarah. So what's this, sir? So says Rav Moshe, there's no sir. He says, if you're going to ask me, mitchila, should a shul have the flags? He says, no. He says, a shul is not a place for the flag. First of all, it is mundane. There's no isser. He says, certainly it shouldn't be there b'kivius, the sense of permanence. If you're having a program on July 4th or whenever and you want to hang up a flag, okay, that's different than having it there. He says, certainly to be right next to the Aron Kodesh, that also is not appropriate. Is it usser? It is not usser. I just think it's not appropriate if you ask me, mitchila. Now, parenthetically, there's a big debate across religions whether flags should be brought into churches. I found online many tshuvas, I guess, if you will, lahavdil. They have a response also. It's not really based on sources so much. That's I think, interesting, the difference. It's based on the particular sensitivity or the svara of the one writing the responsa. It's a big debate. It's a machlokes, whether a church, a shul, in Lahavdil, stands for, it transcends, should transcend politics, and should transcend that which is secular. It's a place which is geared towards service of God. Don't mix in other elements. So Rav Moshe says, ideally I wouldn't. But, this is unbelievable. Says Rav Moshe, three lines from the bottom of that paragraph, four lines from the bottom, Vim efsher ba'ofen shall shalom l'salkei mi'beis ha'kneses. If you could remove them in a peaceful way, now that doesn't mean in the middle of the night when no one's watching. If you could remove it in a peaceful way, haya zed davar tov, better. Aval la'asos machlokes b'shvil zeh, usser. So there's no isser to hang up a flag in shul, but there's an isser to create machlokes about having a flag in shul. Machlokes is usser. Says Rav Moshe, V'im haya koach b'lo machlokes la'akor kol inyan ha'degel. So that's better. Aval chas v'shal in the last line, lasos machlokes b'zeh. A very strong word, again. Chas v'shalom lasos machlokes b'zeh. And then, the last paragraph is unbelievable, and it resonates and it rings so true 60 years later. V'achin, elu sherotzim lasos b'shvil zeh minyan b'makam acher. Those who want to make a minyan in another place, they think they're doing a great thing. We're firmer than that. We don't want the flag in shul. Even Rav Moshe said it's not appropriate. So they think they're doing a great thing. We're going to have a higher standard in our shul. Ein osim kahogan. They're not doing properly. V'rak hu inyan politika. You're getting into politics, the political matter. Mitzad koach hayetzer. V'as satan. It's koach hayetzer. It's the satan who is what? Asher ba'avnoseinu arabim. Unfortunately, mirakid Benon, is dancing among us. The Satan dances when he can bring up machlokas. And this was said 60 years ago. How true is that? Today, Rav Moshe says, you think you're doing a great thing, you're elevating the standard of Shul and Kedusha. Chas v'shalom is an Israel asos machlokas. It's Inyan Politika. Ad asher yirachim Hashem. The Yishlach lenu agol tzedek. The Ya'are aleinu ruach mimar malaras b'derech ha-Torah v'emes l'blu l'nasos yamin u'smol. So says Rav Moshe, is it ideal? No. If you could remove from the shul in a way that's not going to create machlokas, that's great. But to create machlokas, division in shul, to create a new shul, says Rav Moshe, it's terrible. I was talking this out with Rabbi Luban the last couple of days, and he told me, he said he wants to write an article, so I'm not going to spoil too much of it. He said there are around a dozen tshuvas in Rav Moshe where shalom is a driving force, which is fascinating. One example, he told me, it was a big debate whether, and I think I spoke to my mother about this once because she was executive director in the Bergen County mikvah. When you have conservative and reform conversions, should an Orthodox mikvah allow the tevila, the immersion, to complete the geirus? Should an Orthodox mikvah allow that? Now, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik wrote in the 1980s, very against it. He said it's lifnei iver lo titein michshol. It's you're contributing to intermarriage because now they're going to think they're Jewish and they're going to marry Jews and they're really not Jewish. And now you have a part in their intermarriage. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said it's a chil Hashem. It's misayel over a there was very against it. Rav Moshe wrote in the Tshuva, I think 15, 20 years before that it's okay. Ideally, it's not okay. But what's that going to do? What's that going to do? It's going to create such a division, such an animosity. You have a lot of communities have one mikvah. And if you're going to not, even though it's not good, and even though it might be contributing to intermarriage, shalom reigns supreme. Someone like Rav Moshe can say that. I certainly don't have the shoulders to paskin on such a big shaila for the sake of shalom, but this is another example where Rav Moshe held the virtue, the value of shalom to be of the greatest importance. So that's Rav Moshe. Others disagreed with Rav Moshe. This actually question came up 5 years beforehand. There was a journal called Hamaor, which originated in Brooklyn. The Rav Meir Amzel, I don't know if anyone has heard of him, was a Rav of the Hamaor Shul in Borough Park. He died in 2007. He had this Torah journal called Hamaor, and people sent in questions. So in 1952, someone sent in a question that there's shuls that have flags. Is that okay? This was 5 years before Moshe addressed the question. Rav Chaim Noah, who was living in Eretz Yisrael, Rav Chaim Noah was famous for his opinions on Shiurim. Often you hear the Machlokas, the Chazon Ish, and Reb Chaim Noah, how big is a Kazayas? It comes up on Pesach every year. How many ounces? What's the minimum? 3.3 ounces, 3.9 ounces, 4.1 ounces. So Reb Chaim Noah, who had died 2 years later, he wrote a tshuva and he said it's absolutely usur to have flags in shul for halachic reasons. Why? The Gemara says that, and it's paskin in Shulchan Aruch, that in the third bracha of benching, you can't mention Machlus Shemayim. In the bracha of Rachim. Why not? Because we mention Machlus Beis David. Right? And benching, we'll bench in a little bit. We mention Machlus Beis David. And the Gemara said, the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, V'ein lahazkir ba shu Machlus Acher. We can't mention any other kingdom. V'aomer u'malchusecha. Umachus based David Mashiachah to say, and Hashem, your Machus and Machus based David, Toez mistaken. She'ein lahashvos Malchusa da'ara in Malchusa de Shemaya. We can't equate the Machus Shemayim with Machus based David. To talk about Malchus in this world, king, which is Basar Adam, and in the same sense, talk about Hamachus Shemayim, so that's inappropriate. It's almost as if you're equating the two. So the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, we don't say. We just say, O Machlus Beis David Mishichacha. So Seder Rav Chaim Noah, a shul in Aron Kodesh represents Machlus Shemayim. That's why we're in a shul. We're davening to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's all about Machlus Shemayim. A flag represents Machlus Beis David. Whether it's the U.S. flag, the Israeli, whatever flag you want to have, represents Machlus Beis David. It's Machlus Da'ara. If you're going to bring flags into a shul, so now you're, so to speak, equating Malchusa de Ara with Malchusa de Shemaya, and said Rabbi Chaim, no, you can take a look at later. In source 6, he said it's forbidden to have a flag in the shul for that reason, which I thought was interesting. You do see it in shuls. Mostly, I've yet to see it in a newer shul, in some of the older shuls. I don't know if people were more patriotic back then. I don't know what shifted. Maybe the changes were Moshe Struva. I'm not sure, but you do...
It was a reaction to communism.
That's why we had the flags.
Yeah.
Interesting.
We had to make sure that we were not being associated with communism, especially the Jewish community.
Right. Interesting. Okay. Very interesting. Yes?
I know this is a topic maybe for another shiur. In your readings, did you find any kasher connection between this flag debate and about saying the prayer for the Malchus?
So
this, the flag, you know, we're showing we support and we love our government, and we,
right,
and we have separately a bracha, and
you know, so
most of the more orthodox shuls don't seem, right, to say those prayers anymore.
That one they say. Huh? All shuls I've been to say the tefillah, Hanosin Shulam Alachim. The tefillah. They don't necessarily say it for the Israeli government, but for the American government, we say. So I'll tell you, as I was preparing the shiur, so like three or four other topics and areas popped into my mind. So we'll meet again next year. It'll be part two. But that, I didn't see a connection, though. Of course, I should have mentioned this earlier. It is a Mishnah in Avos, which says we should always daven l'shloma shel malchus. The Abudraham, who's an early Rishon, has the text. It's slightly different than the text we say in shul, of a tefillah instituted as part of davening. I don't remember if he said to only say it on Shabbos or every day for the government. We can't survive. We can't live here. And as Rabbi Victor Miller said, this country has been, you know, where we are today. There's never been a time as good for the Jew in Gaulis. With the rise in anti-Semitism, maybe it could be it's too good. It could be that's led maybe to assimilation, and that's led to our inability to daven properly. I'm speaking to myself that we have it so good. I mean, in the 1950s in America, there was a quota on Jewish students allowed at the medical school. That was impetus for Albert Einstein College of Medicine. That was the 1950s, and now you go to a Yankee game and get kosher food and marv. I mean, it's unbelievable. There's never been a time in our history where it's been as good for a Jew in Gaulis, and we need to pray for the government. But that's really a topic for another time.
Labor Day.
Now, if anyone's here, I'll tell you the truth. I really completely forgot that there was even such a thing of pledging allegiance. I think when I was younger in school, if my memory serves me correct, we did pledge allegiance. For years, you hear the anthem. You hear the anthem if you go to a sporting event. Many graduations, they sing the anthem. Shul dinners and school dinners sometimes start with the anthem. You go to a baseball game and God bless America. Pledge allegiance, you don't really hear a lot of. Really, the first I heard of this in around a decade or two was last week. Someone sent me a video from the, I don't know if anyone saw this, from the Philadelphia Yeshiva graduation. I don't know if anyone's seen this video. The Philadelphia Yeshiva is one of the top yeshivas in the Haredi world. Or Shmuel Kamenetsky is the Rosh Yeshiva Shlita. That's where our owner, Rabbi Luben, graduated from. And he was honored this year at the dinner, correct? A good stat, parenthetically, his lab partner, I think in chemistry in 10th grade or physics in 11th grade was, anyone know? Rav J.J. Schachter was Rabbi Luben's lab partner in the Philadelphia Yeshiva. It's an interesting stat. Yeah. So, anyways, the Philadelphia Yeshiva, there's a video going around where at their graduation, the 20 or 25 graduating 12th graders in their suits, they were not wearing their hats, stood there, set up as a choir, and said the Pledge of Allegiance. And then they did a beautiful rendition of the national anthem. A choir, they had a person in the front doing the thing, and they took it seriously, and when they started the anthem, Shmuel Kamenetsky, I believe he's in his 90s, stood up. with all the other Rebbeim, Rabbanim of the yeshiva, stood up. They had a close-up on the video. It was very moving. But they started by pledging allegiance. So I started thinking, is there an issue? Clearly not, if they were doing it in the Philadelphia yeshiva. Is there an issue pledging allegiance? I looked around. They asked anyone I spoke to. And I found that Moshe Feinstein, believe it or not, has a tshuva, another tshuva on the matter. For purposes of time, you won't see so much of it inside. Also, it's interesting to see the history of some of these tshuvas. Rav Moshe wrote this in 1963 to Rav Shalom Rivkin. Rav Shalom Rivkin is anyone, I don't know. Yes, is that Mishpacha?
No. Probably somewhere along the line.
Okay. If he says something good, he's Mishpacha. Rav Shalom Rivkin was born in Israel, learned in Torah Vadas. His parents moved to America when he was very young. Was a Rosh Yeshiva in Torah Vadas, was a Rav in Seattle, and ended up becoming the chief rabbi in St. Louis, and was
His son.
That was his son?
Son was in Far Rockaway, St. Louis.
Okay. I thought it was Rav Shalom Rivkin, because he died in 2011, and he was a chief rabbi in St. Louis up until, I think, 2006. So maybe it was his son? Okay. So Rav Shalom Rivkin, thank you for making that correction. Rav Shalom Rivkin sent the letter to Moshe, not about Pledge of Allegiance. The Shaila was, is there a Kiyum Mitzvah for a non-Jew to pray? Is there a Mitzvah? We know there's the Zayin Mitzvah of Bnei Noach. Most of them are prohibitions. Is there a Mitzvah for a non-Jew to pray? Or Moshe has a lengthy discussion about that. In the course of that Tshuva, Rav Moshe addresses the issue, can a Jew and non-Jew together offer a prayer? And the prayer that he says is, let's say they make a nusach, which is Yehi Ratzon Milufnei Ribon Ha'olamim, may it be the will of the Creator of the world. Yitain Li, I'm in source 7 on page 2. I'm not reading all the sources inside. That's why I give it out so you can read it. You can read it on your own time later. It's a long day. It's a long day. So he says, can the Jew say and a non-Jew together a prayer like Yiratzon Lifnei Ribono Olamim Sheyitein Li Chayim Ubracha? Can they say such a prayer? The Jew will have in mind our God, and the non-Jew will have in mind his God. Is that a problem to say the tefillah together? Very interesting. So Rav Moshe says, it depends. If we wrote the tefillah, then it's not a problem. And Ma'ar Sayan, if we're saying it together, people might think we have in mind. He says a Jew is not suspected of praying to another God. So no one's going to see us and them and think we have in mind their God. He said if they wrote the prayer, then it could be a problem. Because the kavana in that prayer was towards their God. He says if you want to add in the words Elokei Yisrael, then it's clear that it's for our God. So then it's not a problem. Okay. Fine. And then, I don't know why he throws this in. If you take a look on the left column, he writes, Ubedvara tfila haktsara, sheomrim hayaladim bebati sefer shal medina. The short prayer that the children say in public schools, kanira shebekavana lo hiskiu remes me'amunasam. It was on purpose that when they wrote the prayer, or the institute changed a bunch of times over the years, but when they wrote the prayer, it was with the right intentions that they didn't mention their religion. Why? Mishum shenasu abatei hasefer gam leYehudim. Public schools, today there's some, but certainly back in the 1920s, 30s, 40s, it was very prevalent for Jewish children to go to public school. Ulaoda amim, and other nations and religions, asher bebendina senu agadola, v'hamoshlim bebendina senu, him anshe chesed. Also, a friend wrote to me, and I was discussing him, he said 5 or 6 tshuvas, Rav Moshe writes this notion that America is a medina shel chesed, an anshe chesed, someone even went as far to say that influenced some of his psakim. I don't think you could say that Rav Moshe Feinstein was influenced by his love of America to issue Rav Moshe didn't have other agendas mixed in. It was MS and Halacha and Shalom. But he writes that Anshei Chesed, those who run our country, are Anshei Chesed. Ve'in rotzim l'hashlam emunasam al shahar ezrachim. They don't want to impose their religions on other nationalities and other religions. V'lachein yistu nusach kazeh. Therefore, they instituted such a nusach, shelachein lo shayach lachush, shenisyased ayde kumarim lekavon alamunasim. There's no chashash that it was instituted by the religious leaders for their religion. V'lachein ein bazeh eser medina. There's no problem to say this prayer. Rav Moshe ends up saying, you actually fulfill a mitzvah daraisa of tefillah. To fulfill a mitzvah daraisa of tefillah, a person just needs to say any prayer to God. So Rav Moshe says, you're actually mekayim a mitzvah daraisa. He suggested it's a good thing. It's actually a good thing because it could be these children otherwise wouldn't daven. So at least there's some davening. The Lubavitcher Rebbe was very opposed. It's some element of davening to daven. Ah, you're saying God's name and you're not wearing a yarmulke. So is that a problem? For most of that's not a problem because to say HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name in English, he proves from a shach, or not in English, but in other languages, there's no iser of mechika, b'diyavet l'chachila, you shouldn't. So to say God's name without a head covering, since it's in English, there's no iser. And says Rav Moshe Feinstein, it's okay to pledge allegiance. And Rav Moshe throws in a fascinating point, which I think goes well with the first tshuva. On the second paragraph, the last word on the line, ulehis arev b'machlokes b'nei ha-medina im lomar tfila zubi batei sefer shal medina olavato. Should Jews get involved in the machlokes about saying the Pledge of Allegiance or whether they should nullify it? I believe that controversy was in the mid-1950s, where in 1954 they added the word under God. And I believe this goes well with what you were saying. It was in response to communism as the Cold War was intensifying. They wanted to distinguish the United States. Yes. Yes. He instituted it, or he didn't institute it. He passed off in legislation to allow it. So we want to distance ourselves from being a godless communism. So it was a big debate whether to say that. In fact, in 2004, there was a lawsuit that went all the way to the Supreme Court because an atheist, I have his name somewhere over here, maybe not, an atheist claimed that you're forcing God on my, what was it? It could be. We're forcing God on my daughter to say under God. It went all the way to the Supreme Court, and in the end, the Supreme Court punted it because the father who brought the lawsuit was not the girl's father. He was married to the girl's mother or was dating the girl's mother. So they said, you don't have jurisdiction over your daughter, and I believe they didn't rule. It's state by state. Under God doesn't really mean God. It's an expression. We could talk about this for a long period of time that we know the time. So Rav Moshe says, should we get involved in that debate? Says Rav Moshe, at Sasi, Haisa, my advice was, Shalol is Arev Dira Hashem Bazeh. God-fearing Jews should not get involved in that debate. Even though there are those who said that you should stand up and you should push that, our opinion, the Jewish position, that you should say the tefillah. We're pro-God, right? The yesh panim lekan lekan. I hear both sides. The al tasa adaf. Better not to get involved. Now, I'm not sure if the reason he says not to get involved is because in general, it's better for us not to get involved in things that don't really relate to us. I think often Jews like to get involved in we like to get involved in a lot of things, and we're it's not our land, and we're strangers here, and we don't need to be so public in issues that don't necessarily pertain to us. Or Rav Moshe is being consistent that machlokes could be very damaging, and to engage in public machlokes over this issue is not worthwhile. But to
the pledge as it's feeling, doesn't count. If you're pledging allegiance to the flag.
He's saying it's not even a tefillah.
Well, I said, why does he consider it a tefillah? Unless he's talking about something else.
Is it a prayer? That's you. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God. He's saying, why is that even a prayer?
It's not a prayer.
You're raising a very good point. Rav Moshe thought it was a prayer. Why did he think that was a prayer?
Because it's under God.
Okay, but if I say, yeah. Right. If I say I'm a I'm having a barbecue tonight, please, you know, God willing. Is that a prayer?
No.
It's not a prayer.
No, it's affirming your belief in something.
Affirming your belief in what? I guess, what? May it be your will. May it be your will to have a barbecue. I can't have a barbecue without you. Now, I can burn the food. That's up to me. But it's interesting. Why is that a prayer? I'm pledging to... I don't even know what it means to pledge to a flag.
Is it a neder? Is it a shvua? Something that you shouldn't be saying because of that. That's what I heard.
There are those. There are those who discuss that a problem. The shvua. Is that a real shvua? Is that a real shvua? You're raising a very good point. Yeah, it sounds like you're acknowledging God's gift or God's involvement in this notion, this report. Okay, fine. We have a lot of time. I'll touch very briefly on the last issue, which is very interesting. I had read a story in one of Rabbi Rakefet's books on Rabbi Silver. He tells a story that in 1912, Rabbi Silver, with a delegation of rabbis, went to meet President Taft. It was the first time a group of rabbis, I believe, maybe the first time Orthodox rabbis, were received by a president. They went to push the president to a more vigorous policy of protest against Russia for their discrimination against Jews. And they took a train from New York to go meet President Taft. They had a spirited debate on the train whether they should take off their hats as a sign of respect when they greeted President Taft. Rabbi Silver argued and won the debate. They had to keep their hat on so they could recite the bracha upon greeting a president. Now, I'm not sure if he didn't have a yarmulke underneath or he had a yarmulke but didn't want to say the bracha of the hat. I'm not sure. But that was the debate, and they kept their hats on. And when they finally were brought in to meet President Taft, the story goes that quickly President Taft told his aide or whatever, "Q, get me my hat. I should wear a hat in the presence of such distinguished people." And Rabbi Silver was like, "Yes." You know, he validated his request. They had a lifelong a friendship. In fact, President Taft's son, Senator Robert Taft in Cincinnati, represented Rabbi Silver in 1932 pro bono in a lawsuit about the mikvah, to allow the mikvah in Cincinnati. They bought land right across the street from the Reform Shul, the Conservative Shul, I don't remember. And this is not also a new problem. They took him to court. Can't have a mikvah. It's going to the old country is coming to Cincinnati. It's terrible. And President Taft's son, who was a senator, represented in pro bono and won the lawsuit. So the story, Rabbi Kefet said that Rabbi Silver said the bracha on seeing, it's the bracha on seeing a king, said the bracha. They had a cantor who came who said it in English and said the bracha. Now, it doesn't say if he said the bracha with Hashem's name or not. That is the debate I like to touch on very briefly. The Gemara says, and this is in source 8, the Gemara says at the bottom of page 2, Haroe Malchei Yisrael, Omer Baruch, Shechalak Michvodo Lirev. Someone who sees a Jewish king should say, and the Rishonim say it's Baruch Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam, but the Gemara doesn't put it in. It wants to, you know, for purposes of space, we make a bracha that God gave of His kavod to those who fear Him. Malchei Umos Ha'olam. Someone who sees a Gentile king, Omer Baruch Shenasan Michvodo Lebasar Adam. We praise God that He gave of His covet, of His honor and glory to human flesh, to a king. The Gemara says the person should run. Lo'olam yishtadel adam larutz likras malchei Yisrael. A person should run, should jump at the opportunity to greet a king. V'lo likras malchei Yisrael bovad, not just a Jewish king, elafil likras malchei umas olam. The opportunity to see a Gentile king, a person should run. Why shem yizke? And the way Rashi explains it, a person merits olam haba after 120 years. Yavchin ben malchei Yisrael L'malchei umos olam, he will understand the contrast between the reward, the kavod we get in Shemayim for living a good life versus the kavod that a non-Jewish king receiving this world. We think it's such a kavod, it's so much honor, that's going to pale in comparison to the honor that we will receive in Olam Haba. So that is a bracha recited on a king. And this bracha has been recited. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld in Israel went to Jordan in 1924 to meet King Abdullah. It's a fascinating part in history. They were very worried about the rise of Zionism. Rav Yosef Chaim Zonnefeld was the leader of the anti-Zionist movement in Israel, and he went with the delegation of Rabbanim to talk to King Abdullah to kind of push his fears aside. And he recited the bracha of Zion King. Rav Sturmach writes that many, many people recite the bracha on seeing the Queen of England. There's a discussion, should it be limited to a king? There's only a queen. Just about all the posts can say it's true for a queen as well. And many people would go, and the queen peeks out, and people would recite a bracha. The big debate is whether this would apply to a president in a democratic society. The president of the United States, whether you like him or not, whether you voted him for or not, we're not going there today, would one recite a bracha? So everyone quotes a tshuva of the Radvaz. The Radvaz, we'll skip source 9 and 10, and source 11, was asked this question, not about the President of the United States, because this was before there were Presidents of the United States. He writes, Kol Shadavar, the rule is, source 11 on page 3, Kol Mishu Chashiv B'Sholtanuso Kimelach, anyone in their rule is considered like a king. Vidan, judges, V'Horeg B'Mishpat, and can kill. The ain mi shemishana al dvar of mehen lalav umilav lahen. Anyone who can kill and could pass judgment without anyone else changing the words or needing anyone else's approval to change from negative to positive negative, kimelachu umivarech alav, is like a king and you make a bracha. So does that apply in our country? It does not.
It does.
It does?
He can send a missile to a country.
Interesting. So this is a big debate. This is a big debate in the postgame. And what's somewhat ironic is that I saw the discussion almost predominantly in postgame in Israel, who addressed the Shaila. Why? Because very frequently the President of the United States, comes to Israel, and every time he comes, everyone gets busy with this question. So Rav Moshe Sternbach, he argued that one does not recite a bracha. You can say a bracha, but without Shema Malchus. You do not recite a bracha on seeing the President of the United States. Why? He says, first of all, he has to get elected and needs other people. That's different than a typical king. He says, second of all, they could get rid of him. They could be impeached. That's not the same power as a king that we're talking about. Yeah, but that, okay. Second of all, and third of all, says Rav Sturmach, his power is more limited. You're right. In this case, he was able to send a missile, but says Rav Sturmach, he needs, there's process, there's protocol to get a law passed. He can't just decide to give the death penalty on an individual in this country. Maybe warfare is different, but he can't do so. So says Rav Sturmach, one would not recite a bracha, and many other poskim held the same. He also said it's short. There's a term. It can be 4 years. That's not the kavod that the Gemara is talking about. Others disagreed. Rav Avadya Yosef, and you could take a look at the tshuvas inside later, Rav Avadya Yosef says, you could. Doesn't the president have the right to pardon someone who sends to death? Yeah? So says Rav Avadya, life and death, it's really life, but life and death is in the hands of the president. Because someone who was convicted and was about to be killed, the president 5 minutes before could could stop that death penalty, stop the execution. So he does have the ability, like even according to the Radvaz, he has the ability. Says Rav Ovadia, even without that, says Rav Ovadia, the Radvaz was only talking about a person who doesn't have all the covet of a president, but he's like a ruler. If he has the ability to kill, then he has a din like a melech, and we'd make the bracha. But a president has all the covet. Has all the kavod, the honor, and even if he doesn't have the absolute ability to kill, one would recite a bracha. Rav Ovadia says that when Nixon came to Israel, we did not recite a bracha. Oh, we recite a bracha without Hashem's name. Why? Because he has another svara. Rav Ovadia Yosef said, yeah, if a president or a ruler, a king, is wearing civilian clothing, sin, there's no bracha. It's only when it's in a real bekavodik kind of way. Rav Sternbach even questions whether someone who goes to the royal palace and sees the queen peek out of the window, maybe there you shouldn't recite. He says, Rav Sternbach writes, I know many gedolim who went and said a bracha when the queen was spotted. But he says, I'm not even sure you recite a bracha on that because you don't see in all the pomp and the godless, the covered, when they're peeking out of the window. He says, maybe you do because it's at the palace and the standing. You still see an element of covered. He says, even if a group of rabbis would go in the Oval Office and just have one meeting with the president, maybe you wouldn't recite a bracha then because you're there almost seeing the president.
President dressed any different than you?
Yes, the president, I mean, his suits are probably a little more expensive than mine. I'm not sure. I think I'm wearing a Trump tie, actually. No, not today. Yeah. You're right. It's somewhat, maybe it was different then, but there is the difference between what, you know, when you see the president in a suit coming out of Air Force One, then, you know, you see him wearing khakis and a polo shirt on the golf course. But that was a big debate in the postgame. It probably matches up, you know, 50% say a bracha, 50% don't say a bracha. The consensus in civilian clothes, not say a bracha. Some say, you know, let's say you don't even see the president, you see the motorcade, maybe you should make a bracha because you see like the cover. It's an impressive looking sight. Most will say that a bracha. I did a little search online. Every congregational rabbi who has gone to the White House to meet the president for some matter has addressed this issue. And it seems that literally, but around half said the bracha and half said it without shame, umalchus, because of this debate. To just say the bracha, you're getting into bracha levatala, a lot say suffic brachas lahakel. Question is it really the same or not? For those who are very much anti our president, and we're not going to discuss whether you should or shouldn't be, but I will mention, as the last source, that the Sha'ari Mitzion Belacha, Rav Brown, who was a Rav in America, was a contemporary of Moshe, I believe, he quotes from the Chidah, I think, that even if the Melech is a Rasha, I'm not saying he is, but even if the Melech would be a Rasha, he would still recite the Bracha upon seeing him. Because the Bracha isn't the kavod of the individual. It's the kavod of what? The office, what he represents. And even if you would have a melech, who's a Rasha, one who would see the melech, would recite a bracha, he does not quote those who disagree with that point.
Are there a lot of sources from the Knot on that?
Yeah, but I don't know about the bracha. The bracha came afterwards. But yeah, there were a lot of wicked kings in our history. I thought there were some interesting topics and vignettes, and there's more to say, but certainly whether a person is going to pledge allegiance today or not, whether a person is going to hang up a flag, we'll probably see flags as they're driving by. The element of Hakaras HaTov to this country, I don't think is debatable without question. And while we shouldn't need one day for that, but there's Mother's Day and there's Father's Day, even though we don't need one day, it's every day. I think today would be a good time to at some point express, or at least contemplate, the Hakaras HaTov we have to this country. Everyone should have a wonderful day, and don't forget to bench. Whatever my wife says to go outside and make the food.